All right, welcome back to Yahoo Finance Live on this Jaws Report Friday. A real shocker of a headline report here. Non-farm payrolls in January up 467,000. Now, keep in mind, coming into the session, many Wall Street firms were looking for a decline in non-farm payrolls. Goldman Sachs, for example, was looking for a 250,000 drop on payroll. So a real shocker of a report here. You saw average hourly earnings of 5.7%. And in light of this report, you're seeing stock futures really accelerate their losses on the fears that perhaps the economy is overheated and perhaps the Fed might have to jack up interest rates by 50 basis points in March. All right, we're going to bring back in Emily Rowland, John Hancock, investment management, co-chief investment strategist, and to our friend Torsten Slok, Apollo Global Management chief economist. Torsten, let me start with you here. You know, if there's anything positive in this report, is one, the economy created a lot of jobs in January, so that's good. Average hourly earnings are up. You know, what does this mean for consumer spending for the next couple months?
Yeah, so the surprising thing really here is that Omicron has had a relatively mild impact on the labor market. I know there's a lot of things going on with the revision, as Julie also mentioned a minute ago, and also the things that are going into here, to what extent there's some seasonal factors. But the conclusion, at least from everything in the report, suggests that the U.S. consumer is actually still doing pretty well. We're seeing strong wage growth. And in the break here, I was also looking at wage growth across the income distribution. And wage growth is now also rising for people in the middle and high income categories. So it looks like a fairly broad-based tailwind for the U.S. consumer, at least on the income front. And on top of that, also adding almost 500,000 jobs is, of course, also very helpful. So if we had had this report like 12 months ago, it would have been a very different conversation. But the fact that we have it now, where the keyword, as you just said, Brian, is overheating, that's, of course, changing the whole narrative in terms of what this means for markets.
Emily, representatives of the White House have been out in force this week, setting the bar low for this report, flagging the distortions that we expected to see. Did they goof? Did they miss? No, seriously, though, like, did they miss set the expectations of the market by being that aggressive with that narrative?
Yeah, I think not only was it, you know, officials in Washington, but it was a lot of the economists and us strategists who expected, you know, a potentially negative number here. And I think we were expecting, given that the market reaction would be very muted. You know, the expectation is the Fed's going to move ahead with rate hikes. We know that's going to happen. The Fed's told us that. I think that there was an idea that there would be maybe a sense of calm, or if we did see this negative print, that maybe the Fed wouldn't have any reason here to move more aggressively. But now I think that the challenge is being exacerbated. And you can see that here in the reaction of the markets. This has been a really, really tough start to the year because stocks aren't working and bonds aren't working. Usually when stocks aren't working, that's when that kicker comes in within fixed income, that diversification, that buffer against those drawdowns that you see in equity markets. And we're off to a very almost unhealthy start to the year and confusing. I was actually very happy to hear Torsten say that there's a lot of confusion in terms of the cross asset performance in markets this year. And I agree with that. You know, stocks down, bonds down, oil prices up, consumer sentiment deteriorating. That's not a great thing. And we're getting that tightening in financial conditions already that the Fed's looking to do as we move throughout the year. So we actually think that given this report, given the recent data, the Fed's moving forward with tightening into a slowing economic growth environment. That's not a great thing.
At the same time, you know, this number, this 467,000, Torsten, I have to ask you, given the big revisions that we got to the prior month, the BLS also telling us 6 million people said they were unable to work because their employer closed or lost business because of the pandemic. And that's higher than the 3.1 million in December. Among those who reported in January, they were unable to work because of the pandemic-related closures. 23.7% received at least some pay from their employer for the hours not worked. Given those, again, distortions, I don't know what other word to use here, is there even a risk that this 467 gets revised higher, or that we see, in other words, that we see a huge jump in February? In other words, if you can get a 467 read with this kind of effect from Omicron, what does it look like without Omicron?
Yeah, that's why the bullish argument for growth and the argument for growth not slowing is that Omicron is now burning out. And if you look at the total aggregate employment now in the US economy, is now only 3 million jobs less than what it was in February of 2020. So we at least need to recreate those 3 million jobs and potentially even more if you also take account of population growth and modestly also higher immigration. So the conclusion is that if Omicron is really burning out, and to your point, Julie, if we could get that amount of jobs created, even with Omicron here, and we all begin now to go more to restaurants, go more and travel on airplanes, stay at hotels, all that should then create a boom in consumer services. And with that would, of course, come also accelerating growth. So one way of looking at what's going on is that at least the Fed seems very, very clear that they do not believe that there will be a slowdown. They do believe that growth will continue to be strong. And they also do believe that they need to move potentially relatively quickly, in particular now that they also talk about running down the balance sheet. So I think that the discussion that we're having, absolutely, growth has been slowing a bit on a number of indicators. But if Omicron does start to subside, there is certainly also some upside risks, not only to growth, but also to corporate earnings.
Emily, our breaking news desk flagging this one to us. U.S. interest rate futures imply more than five hikes this year after this jobs data. That's from FedWatch, ultimately. Is five rate hikes, in your view, enough? And if we do get more than five, do you think the Fed will ultimately kill this bull market?
I do. The Fed kills every bull market. And the challenge with five rate hikes is the shape of the yield curve. So we've obviously seen the yield on the two-year treasury move higher, the 10-year treasury not as much. So we're actually around 60 basis points as far as the shape of the U.S. yield curve. And I don't see how you can get five rate hikes in there without risking inverting it. So we actually see the longer end of the curve moving sort of sideways in a choppy fashion here as the year progresses, simply because on a year-over-year basis, we're not going to get that massive amount of fiscal stimulus that we saw in 2021. We're not going to get stimulus checks again. We're not going to see that ultra accommodative monetary policy helping boost spending. So I think that that's a big challenge as the year progresses. It's not an overly bearish message. I'm not looking for a recession here in 2022, but we do see growth cooling, and we think that that creates more pressure on the yield curve. And we think ultimately the Fed's going to be able to hold back. And so we would certainly take the under on five rate hikes this year.
And just to add to that, I mean, Emily, is absolutely. Absolutely. Emily is totally right. I mean, the whole goal for the Fed really is to cool things down, because that's the only way you can ultimately cool inflation down. So exactly, the idea is to try to tighten financial conditions in a way where we cool down growth, and therefore growth should be lower in the Fed's perspective. And that's exactly why that will ultimately lead to lower inflation. So the target here for the Fed is to cool inflation down. And the tool to do that is to tighten financial conditions, which is a different way of saying either rates higher or the stock market potentially lower or credit spreads wider or some combination of those three things.
Yeah, well, this morning, I think we're seeing a combination of all of those three things. There's another sort of elephant in the room or backdrop that I alluded to at the top of the show that I want to bring up again, and that's tech, right? This has been a crazy week for tech stocks, right? And it looks like it's going to be crazy again today, where whatever gyrations we expect in the broader market, you know, you got Amazon there up by 11%. Emily, what does that... How are you? I don't even know what question to ask. It's been so crazy. I mean, what narrative can you even draw from what we've seen in technology?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been up and down as far as these giant individual names go and earnings results so far for Q4. A couple of obvious weak spots there, but a number of really bright spots as well. So tech earnings on the whole are coming in nicely. We look forward to 2022 earnings growth estimates, and technology is showing of the best earnings estimates across all 11 sectors. There are areas that are expected to see negative earnings growth in 2022. Financials is one of them. You know, technology has nice earnings stability. That's what we want. We see a lot of these companies having tons of cash on their balance sheets, great free cash flow, ability to grow organically, given these sort of competitive elements of their positioning. As the economy returns to more normal levels, we want to find sectors and stocks that can grow. And technology is where you're going to find that.
Forreston, are tech stocks the new value stocks? I mean, I guess you can't say that of Amazon, whose PE is still above 50. But, you know, given the pullback that we've had, should people be reframing how they think about those traditional definitions?
Well, I mean, at least from a very broad perspective, the way that I think about that is in terms of has the correction in the stock market, is that enough to tighten financial conditions for the Fed to say, well, now we are going to cool things down? And if you look at the financial conditions indicators from the St. Louis Fed, from the Chicago Fed, from the Kansas City Fed, I mean, they are not showing any dramatic tightening in financial conditions. In fact, some of them are still positive, meaning financial conditions are still accommodative and supporting GDP growth. So I would say from a Fed perspective, the market so far has, I know it came down a lot and now it came up and now we're going down a little bit again. I still think that the risk, if you will, is that the Fed might look at that and say, we just haven't tightened financial conditions enough to cool inflation down. And with the print, Julie, as you mentioned earlier, for CPI next week of more than 7%, I mean, that just tells the Fed, well, we still got to get going to make sure that we can cool things down. And again, the only tool the Fed has to try to cool things down and cool the economy down and ultimately cool inflation down is to try to either get the stock market lower, credit spreads wider, or rates higher, or some combination of those three.
Well, I will say both of you have given me about 15 things to write after the show, so I thank you for that. It's a very busy day. Emily Rowland, John Hancock, Investment Management, Co-Chief Investment Strategist. Good to see you. Torsten Slok, our friend over at Apollo Global Management. You're their chief economist. Good to see you as well.